Clough, I think this is, I think this might be episode 22 of the Decoded podcast.
Yeah, it is.
Wild stuff.
Have you mentioned this side hustle to anyone?
Well,
or like has it popped up?
My wife knows about it.
My inner circle. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I don't, I've not really been walking around talking about it. I haven't been. No, not like I did with RC Connects. I'm just doing this. It feels good. It's fun. It's good to chat about work stuff with somebody who understands.
Mm-hmm.
And no, have you?
Well, I've popped it up a couple times because of the. It's usually in. It's usually in relation to someone trying to wrap their head around, you know, like what's up with this podcasting thing. And there's some there are individuals that are kind of checking in and sort of seeing podcasts as a sort of like a new medium. And I realize that it's not a new medium, but that doesn't change the fact that it can be a new medium for somebody. So in part of the definition, are trying to sort of, I guess, shape what a podcast can be, what they are and what they can be. I like to counterpoint. So I've had a couple colleagues talk about they'll mention some very polished podcast that they're listening to. And I think, many of them I know about, because there's quite a few podcasts, whether educational or just, let's say, entertainment, the stuff that's not about school, that take up space on the forefront. They're like TV shows, right? In some ways, when you start to sort of watch, you start to find out people that are doing these podcasts, and then you start to hear repeat hits like, you know, Ted Ed does one, and there's a ton from NPR that are there, and they take up that sort of upper layer of space where the podcast is kind of an extension of something else that's even further up, whether it's a TV show or marketing or something like that. Anyways, so I often like to mention this because it's really another piece of that podcast puzzle where this kind of extended reflective practice doesn't have to come with the anchors of a ton of polish. It can be a conversation. And it's funny, you and I have talked about this a few times, about that arc of professional creativity and that sort of intensity where early in careers, and we've seen this with some teacher candidates, that real intensity of constantly having to be the everything and connected with everything and doing everything. And really, that's just the whole frenetic nature, I think, of becoming a teacher. Like, you don't know which trick is going to click for you, and then you get your sort of interview and your connection with the school. So you're doing so much. And then you carry that into your teaching, and you start to realize you're in the classroom, and you realize in the classroom you have to do a lot. Like, it's pretty good training in the beginning. And then you kind of arc back around, and you eventually come back to that you want to simplify things, because you grow and your life becomes more complex, and you have to come to a place where, if you've always loved playing hockey and hockey has always been your thing, at some point when hockey stands in the same space as, let's say, building a relationship with your significant other, well, then things have to change. You might not be able to play rec hockey anymore. You might then have to say, well, you know, okay, I'll do house league, and then I can still spend time with other things that are important. I very much like to represent what this is, the Decoded podcast, in that frame, because my life is very complex. I don't even like to say very. My life is complex. There's a ton of moving pieces. When I carve out time for something like this, it's coming out of my time for the most part. I've tried to position it so this is time that I would be waking up or I'd be doing, I don't know, walking on the treadmill. It's not part of the collective time of the whole family being around. And I get the sense that this is a part of your positioning as well. The conversation is important. This sometimes therapy, sometimes humor, sometimes just two friends connecting is important, but it can't be that polished version, let's say, of what is out there as a podcast. And I usually get kind of a, they don't get it. They don't get it. Because I get into some of the details. Yeah, you know, we'll have a little bit of a conversation on the front end and we'll just hit record. Like, we'll go for it. We'll take that leap. And I realized in that moment that you can make something really complex by having a lot of moving pieces, or it can be really, it can be as a result of complex thinking and you just land on the simple way to deliver it. Because I would argue that if anybody listened to our conversations, and part of our intent in this was not to make our lives and education any less complicated, but to try to turn it inside out. So you still get to hear some of the pieces. You will hear literacy in our conversation. You will hear advocacy in our conversation. You will hear time management. You will hear social and equity issues, all of that. But it's not hung on a lesson plan frame with a polished intro and sponsored by and looking for some sort of like connection on the tail end, like we're going to be picked up by a major network. And there's a funny space in there when you start to talk to someone about that. And it's a hard product to position. I don't want to call it a product, but it's a hard product to position because there's a whole lot of assumption that if you make a podcast, it has to have all those componentry to it. If you're going to do reflective practice, well, it's got to be so darn technical that OCT and whatever governing body within your school board would be able to sort of see all their little ticky boxes in it. But I would argue that we exist in a little bit of a soul space of teaching where we're pulling from a different deck of cards and really deciding to make points that are a little bit more life challenging than just us as teachers or us as, you know, husbands and fathers and individual men. So that's why I mention it, because I think it's important for someone to understand. I feel like that's my pushback when someone gets really fascinated. Oh, you'd like do two podcasts? I'm like, yeah, but okay, let's bring it back down from 30,000 here. You can do podcasts too, right? And I like to kind of sell it that way. In my way, I almost feel like I'm making it more accessible. Maybe I'm making it more complex and frightening. What? You talk about your kids in your educational podcast? Like, yeah, but yo, like I'll mention strange things that my kids do in my classroom. Like I'll use story to drive learning. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I see you nodding and smiling and stuff. Part of it, okay, so here's where maybe I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit. Like, there goes Clef. He says something like he doesn't have anything to say, and then he's got something to say. And then the other side is sort of like, yeah, I kind of agree. What's sparking off for you on that?
There's lots there. There's lots there. I'll start with, okay, so what you said at first about the learning process, right? Like when you start something new, it's difficult, it's sticky. You feel things like frustration, anxiety, but as you go through the motion, as you go through a process, you start to figure out how something works. And I think that you and I, when we started podcasting, we felt all those things and we still feel a little bit of them now, but now we've gotten through like the beginning, the middle, the end. And now we've come right back to the beginning of something that we want to do our way, knowing what the moving pieces are like in the middle and the end. So I could see how you could frustrate someone or confuse them by bringing them down from 30,000 feet to 10,000 feet. So this is kind of what I put together from what you were saying. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty certain both of us have gone from podcasting at, you know, 10 feet to 30,000 feet easily. I'll give you an example. I know you've got Chasing Squirrels as your regular podcast, your brainchild, and I had Roland Chidiac Connects. And for me, when I think of polished, I don't even think of like the big, big podcasts. I don't, because they're so big, they're a machine. Let's talk just normal, everyday people stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, normal, everyday people stuff. You and I, you have one. I used to have one, a podcast that I think we took from 0 feet to 30,000 feet with the polished intro at the beginning, music, music at the end, music in between, layering the voiceovers with music and all that cool stuff. Okay. So I think both of us, and you know, where we house our digital files and the blog site and all that, like we've been, you're at 30,000 feet still. I've come down. I've also started at 10 feet in terms of podcasting with my students, just using a mobile device, capturing that voice, the voice file, and then just throwing it back out to the internet. Like it can be very simple, and it can be a little bit more complex. And so I appreciate that, that, you know, you use Decoded Podcast in a way to show people that in this conversation of podcasting, you can have different levels, different layers. It doesn't have to be 30,000 feet. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, 30,000 feet was a great mark to hit, because for me, it meant a lot of learning, success, and accomplishing something that at the beginning of the process, I thought was very frightening and, you know, challenging, that I might not be able to do because of the technical requirements and stuff like that. But it's happened. It's been done. And so that's my 30,000. And then I'm just tired of flying that high, right? Like I'm tired of what comes with that. So now what I do is every weekend I get in a little Cessna with you and we just hit the gas and we hit 1,000 feet. Just we get high enough to be able to look down and see what's going on underneath us and decompose some of those things that we see, so we can talk about it as dads, as husbands, as teachers, just as friends, right? Like I'm sure we've bored listeners in some of the episodes where we just go off the rails and talk about things other than education. But hey, it's our podcast, right? It's our 1,000 feet. There are other planes flying around us. It's their business what they're doing. We're doing our thing. So I guess now as I say these things and I hear what you say, I think, you know, why am I not talking to anybody about Decoded Podcast? I think it's because I'm okay with just getting in my little plane every weekend and going up for a tour and then coming down. And it's like, it just doesn't come up in conversation. I think one of the reasons is that the people I'm with every day don't care. Like they just don't care. It's my thing. It's what I do. I get a vibe that, you know, I would be boring them or showing off if I talked about it. So I don't. And they may have things in their lives that they don't share with me because they're just going to be like, well, he probably just doesn't care. So I'm not going to invest this little bit of time with him talking about this when I could be talking about these four things that are relevant to us in our everyday work. And yeah, so I mean, like when you tweet out about the podcast, I would say 95% of the time I will like it and I will retweet it because it's cool. Like it's something we did and I'm proud of it. And, you know, I'd love for people to check it out, but at the same time, I really don't care. So it's really weird. Eh? It's like, I feel like I'm really podcasting for a purpose, and that purpose doesn't involve mass consumption. It, for me, it's like, it's part of the creative process. It's part of, it's about discipline, like being able to do something over a long period of time, because it's important to me and because I enjoy it. You know, if people pick it up, people listen to it, I appreciate what people say. Like you know, Paul McGuire has made comments about it. There's another lady that just tweeted me yesterday. I'm sorry to the listener. I can't remember your name at the moment and I don't have my device with me. But, you know, somewhere along the way, you and I have talked about indoor recess. And she's kind of been, whenever that topic comes up, a re-imaging recess or inclement weather recess, she tags me, you know, because like I talked about it. So I think now it's kind of got her thinking about stuff and we're trying to just do something there with that. So I don't even know if I talked about like along the same lines as what you put down for me, but I just think there's a podcasting fluency with anything else. And I think you and I, we enjoy doing this, and we don't, there's no real agenda except for, you know, it'd be cool if we could continue to take things that are happening at work and be able to just take it apart and look at it, or, you know, take something at work and make it more complicated in the way that we discuss it and how we perceive it. So that's my position at the moment.
Is it Jill Stambolich that is connected with you?
Yeah. Thank you. Jill Stambolich.
Yes. Yeah. She's there's some, like, those are deep waters, Jill's also the individual that I think I mentioned to you once or twice. I got the chance to go in and help out with an AQ, and she brought me in. It was last summer. She teaches music AQs. So she brought me in, and I got a chance to speak to modern learning and kind of modern learning design. It was sort of the heart of it. And it was really cool. And I mean, I've had connections with her previous, going back to some of the pub PD. I met her at first. We did some pub PD in York Region. And it was cool because right away felt that connection of there's some interesting stuff here that I would have never come across in the same amount of time if it was done in an analog mode. So it was sort of the digital that brought the real life relationship and my connection to her. And we're constantly pinging back and forth with ideas, even so much as even recently. So here's a great segue out of that. She reached out to me asking about podcasting, which I kind of flipped into story keeping. Like, podcasting for me doesn't exist anymore, just as kind of podcasting, where my mindset shifts is because of the social nature of it and because of the necessity of deep rapport. I've come to accept that my podcasting frame is not interview. It's not interview. I want to try as best as possible to capture live and release live. And in releasing live, there's no damage. There's no bruising. It's just getting a very vibrant look at whatever somebody could have cracking off at any moment. And it was through that kind of philosophy that I'm still exploring for myself in podcasting that she reached out and asked about kind of a local version of podcasting. I think the Twitter person, her name is Ramona. I'm dropping her last name right now. And she was talking recently about developing something similar, podcasting very locally. So doing it for the school. Dude, I think you were doing something like this too, where you're in the Learning Commons. I think you've had, I believe, at least one or two episodes that you've released where it was a conversation with teachers. Am I right on that? You had something like that with the Chidiac Connects formally, and I'm envisioning maybe you just had your phone with you and you're capturing some conversation in the library.
It actually was a voice ed radio. It was a live stream.
All right.
Where I just grabbed my phone and I sat down with a couple of teachers in the Learning Commons, and I just started talking, and they were talking back, and it was great.
So that was the vibrancy that Jill was talking about. She wanted to find a way to capture the stuff and connect. I think I'm adding extra, but my sense was some of the doors were really closed in the school, so she wanted to be able to have the whole school experience. What's going on in some of these classrooms? And she's developing something right now that would look at having conversation. And if you're going to have conversation, well, then what does it look like to capture the conversation and then share the conversation? So she's reached out in that. But this is what I love about exploring this fluency, is that those things tend to pop up. For me, they're starting to pop up more and more. And I don't know if it's because people are offering the opportunity or I'm just noticing it when I'm no longer focused, when I'm no longer having to hyper-focus on the fluency part of it, like learning a new language. At some point, you're using that language. And when you move from the basic grammar of it into full usage or an immersion, the conversation changes. So if I'm no longer worried so much about a very technical list of interview questions that I need to ask at any one moment, and it shifts into something like what you and I are doing right now, all of a sudden the whole frame changes. It's not the same anymore. And I think it's in that space where you're using the fluency. It's like the difference between taking a French language in a classroom and deciding to go live in France or Quebec. You're still learning, but you're aware of different things in that learning. And I would argue that if you go and choose to live it, you're making relations at the exact same time that you're using, which changes that fluency altogether. And you notice different things. And what's cool is, I think in some ways, Jill has been infected with that. She's trying to think about now the grammar of it technically, but I believe that she will shift very quickly through the grammar of it, especially when the simplicity of the grammar is, you know, take your device and go sit at the table. You've now done a podcast. But I don't know if I would have realized that when I started, because when I started to get the podcast, I had to have my list of 22 questions. I had to, you know, make sure I had the firm connections with somebody that it was like lock. Like, okay, perfect example, you and I. The podcast doesn't happen until we sit down. It can change up until the fifth minute. And is that not the reality of human social relationships? Stuff changes. But when you learn to dance with it, you realize that that can change and you can still have a good conversation. You and I have had to reschedule. We've had to time shift, but we still get pretty good conversations going. And I think that's a part of the new level of fluency in it, is that the learning doesn't have to happen in the exact moment that the system wants you to have the learning happen.
And the learning happens in different places too, right? Because we talk about teachable moments, and you just never know when they're going to pop up or where they're going to pop up. And that's why they're called teachable moments, because you don't anticipate them. Or maybe you can anticipate, but you don't truly know when they're going to pop. And when they do, can you dance with it, right? Can you take advantage of it? I remember when I was in teacher's college, they would keep coming at me and I would just put them aside because I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't have enough confidence. I didn't have enough experience. I didn't have enough like counsel from other people to really understand what to do with them. Now, something could happen in the first few minutes of a lesson that I've planned, and the whole lesson gets put aside because the kids end up taking you down another road with their interest, engagement, motivation, right? So this actually, I wanted to say something about two things that what you were saying reminded me of. I was able to make really close connections to my work with my students. The first is we were doing some work with fractions, and we got to the point where it got pretty deep fast. Like the kids were taking me, they were saying things, and I was like, okay, well, if this is how so-and-so thinks, does anybody else think the same way? Does anybody think differently? Like, let's kind of have a conversation here. And so we were getting into it. And as we got deeper and deeper, the whiteboard was loaded with all kinds of stuff from their learning. And I looked down at these 25 faces, and each face had a different look on it. So I said, okay. We're going to pull the plug, and I want all of you to go to the learning pit, and I want you to put your name on the chart, and I want you to put your name like where you believe you are right now. So entering the pit, are you familiar with the learning pit? Okay. Basically it's a visual way of showing where you are in the learning process. So it doesn't have to be a pit. It can be a mountain, but I remember learning about it, and I learned about it as the pit. And so what happens is you have this pit that goes down and then comes around back up to the top. Okay. And so when you start learning something, you start at the top, and then as you learn it, and as you become confused and aggravated and anxious and nervous, you start to drop into the pit, and then you're at the bottom. But then once you start learning, and you start feeling comfortable with what you're learning, you're feeling more confident, like you could teach it to somebody else, or you can deal with the concept really well, you come out of the pit, and then you're on top again. And so it's that whole learning process. And it's visual when you've got the chart up on the wall and the kids take a sticky note and they stick their name where they feel they are on the pit. And in my pit, it's labeled, right? Like, so at the top going in, it's labeled nervous, anxious, excited. Then at the bottom of the pit, it's like, you know, totally confused, aggravated, really bothered. And then when you're starting to come out again, it's like confident, feeling good about my learning, able to share my learning with other people, that type of thing. And so I said to them, okay, go to the pit, put your name where you think, where you feel you are right now. Let me see what's really going on, because I'm looking at you and I'm not getting it, you know? So they did that. And it was awesome because they're no longer, it's funny, the learning pit of the learning pit is that they're all at the top coming out again, because they all feel good about putting their name on the sticky and just sticking it. And it was wild because when I looked at it, there were kids everywhere. And I was like, okay, this is good, right? So then as we proceeded, I used the students who were coming out the back end to help me with the students who are still stuck on the front end, just as like support. Like, we've got support here. We have people to assist you. We are going to assist you with the fluency, right? And then the second thing, which I just discovered this week, which is pretty cool, is that, so my class this year is really into video, really into YouTube. And we've been making a lot of YouTube videos about our learning and about other things that happen at school. And this week, it was so awesome. I discovered three or four of the students are making their own YouTube videos and they're mimicking the way we make them at school. So like, it's really like, I was watching their videos and I'm like, that looks familiar. And it's because they basically have taken the recipe that we use in the class and they're applying that recipe to their own lives. And so one of the videos was at home making slime. Another video were two kids at school talking about indoor recess and their perspective on indoor recess. And they were using music in certain places and different visual effects. And I had this big smile on my face. When I was done watching them, they were showing me, because we had indoor recess this week, and so they were showing me. And I said to them, I'm so proud of you. And they're just looking at me like, why? And I said, well, because you told me you wanted to be a YouTuber. And so we are using my channel to get you out there to show everybody that you're a YouTuber. But now you're feeling so good about what we're doing and how we're doing it that you're just off on your own, doing it on your own, on your time, at your comfort level. I'm nowhere involved. You showed me. I didn't ask you if you had your own channel. You said, hey, you want to see the videos I'm making? And I said to them, I'm so proud of you for actually showing me an outside of school example of learning, of growth, lifelong learning. We talk about it all the time and they don't really understand what that means because they're always telling me, well, we have to learn. We're here all day. I'm like, you went home and you created something on your own time because you were interested and you used writing, you used oral presentation skills that I've taught you in class. You're using, you know, media literacy. You're doing all kinds of things. You're applying all kinds of things that you're learning here that you're all bothered about when you learn it here, but you're using it outside and it's worth something because you're proud of what you're doing. And so again, I think what I'm doing is I'm circling back to the whole fluency thing. I'm circling back to 30,000 feet. You don't have to be at 30,000 feet, you know, and my kids are showing me that. They're like, they believe my videos that I produce with them are 30,000 feet. And I'm thinking, no, they're not. But to them, it is. It's all about perspective. And so now I told them that by the end of the year, they're going to be making videos totally without me. Like, they're going to grab my equipment in the room and they're going to start doing their thing. And if they're going to use a recipe, great. But along the way, guess what's going to happen, Clough? They're going to tweak that recipe to make it their own, just like we all do, right? We all learned how to teach from someone. You know, we got some basic pointers or whatever from associate teachers and colleagues. And then you take that and you make your own recipe, your own flow, and you go with it. And until something changes or something happens that, you know, you figure something out or whatever. So there's my two cents. I'm all revved up because I had breakfast this morning before the podcast, and you know, because we didn't talk yesterday, I had to save up everything I was thinking for today.
That's good. I like the translation of the skills into the classroom, and then the kids just running with it. It makes me think about the times where, for my students, they're not doing video. Context is a little bit different. I don't have a let's say a cohesive class unit where I can build a little bit of that momentum and even some of the buzz, just because it's so individualized working with the students. But I do spend time in using, let's say, digital tools that are current. And what you made me think in this particular case is the difference between, and the language is slightly dated, but the difference between, let's say, a user, a consumer, a creator, and then, I mean, I guess we could even throw into a coder. So the different layers that you either grow through in using, let's say, digital media and digital media tools, but also sometimes the jump in points, because now some of these spaces you can jump in already at doing videos and not really know a single thing about editing videos. So there's different access points. It brings to mind a conversation I had with my daughter when she was going to a sleepover, and her friend that this sleepover was a birthday party already has a YouTube channel. And my daughter's aware of that. The YouTube channel is, what is it? The jelly bean. What are the jelly beans that sometimes have disgusting flavors in them? Do you know of this? The beanie? I don't even know what it's called. It's a thing.
Bean boozled.
So her friend will put videos of them sort of doing the competitions of eating these things. And she does unboxing and these other, you know, these types of videos. And I said to Maddie, I said, okay, in the party, when you go there, I'm going to ask you not to participate in video. So I'd like you to, and part of it, it's not because I don't necessarily want you to be on the YouTube channel, which is a different discussion. It's because I don't think you understand the fundamentals of what's going on there. And I want you to have choice. I want you to be able to choose not only to participate, and I do think that is her right to choose, but I also want you to understand the mechanics of it. And I asked her a little bit about, I said, do you remember when we asked our kids if they were okay with us sharing video of them, when I did use Facebook, but when we started using social media, just, and tried to walk them through the implications of that we wanted to share with their friends and family. And so we started that conversation a few years ago. But I also think it's now important that before, because I think there's an inevitability, neither of my children have devices of their own yet, but there's an inevitability because of the deeper waters that they will exist in, that no matter what I say, like, don't post video from your phone, it's going to happen. Like, they're going to be in a situation where someone's going to capture, it's going to be done. I want both of my kids to understand the mechanics of what's going on there. So it's an interesting place, because my kids, even as both of them are under 10 years old, I recognize that their leap in points, if I were to hand them a phone right now, they probably could accidentally or intentionally figure out how to post something of themselves. So walking my daughter through that reminds me of what you're doing here, because the kids are actively pursuing some of these skill sets. And then it flips me right into my context, where some of the kids are using tools, and our board is a Google Suite, a G Suite board. They're using the tools in there. And I'll give an example. If I ask a student, I can ask them to put their responses in a Google document, share it with me, or I'll direct them to put in a specific folder, could be a subject-based folder, which is a fairly entry-level, let's say a second-level skill set beyond finding out what a doc is and just using what a doc, then you have that next level up of sharing the doc, putting it somewhere. There's another layer above that sometimes becomes invisible when I say, so the task that they're doing, I said, I need for you to do a graphic organizer. And then the student will say, well, can I have a printed copy of it? And then I realize in that moment, now I need to show you how to create a graphic organizer inside of a Google Doc, or there's an app that there's different apps and extensions that can help you to do that. Previous to that, they're unaware. They want to go back to the paper copy. And in this case, with the question that popped up, it was a table. That's what it was. I actually, in talking to them, showing them how to put a table together in a Google Doc, I realized that the table in itself wasn't purposeful. A graphic organizer, just to speak to it, if it works to help you understand the task, then that's a purposeful graphic organizer. But if it's just how the lesson folded out is in, yes, we're going to put this into a two-column table with rules, like there's rows, there's no reason for it. You could just do it in a question and answer kind of a frame. I'm saying that at the same time. So I teach them something and then I unteach them something. Because I say, okay, here's how you do the graphic organizer. And as I'm explaining it to them, they do it. And as I'm saying the words and I'm saying, and if that doesn't help you understand the task at a deeper level, you can number off the statements on the rows and then the criteria across the top. So I said the rows become your questions, so to speak, and then the columns become the part A, part B. You can do it that way too. And it's interesting as we use these, the new fluencies like YouTubing. I love it when the kids figure out that part on their own. They get the big picture and they say, well, I could do it like this, or I could do it like this, Chidiac, but I kind of going to go this route instead. I get the skill set that you're giving to us, but I'm going to go it in this way. And if the kids are making videos in your classroom that are slightly sarcastic or comical or responsive in some ways, or statements about the learning, that's like a next level up response. Because they're actually delivering the exact thing and in the exact same time saying, yeah, but I can do it my way, or I'm going to go in this direction, or I'm going to make it slightly humorous. So kudos. That's it. That's cool. That's pretty cool. I like those moments.
But again, it's where they're at, right? Like they're the ones who have put us on this trajectory. And you know, it's fun and it's kind of sad that next year when I start with my new group, they may not be interested at all, and that's fine. And then the channel will stay static. I'll upload teacher things here and there because I use that account for that too. So just like the podcasting, like last year was all audio. I think there were some that wanted to go video, but I wasn't prepared, I guess, to get parent permission and jump through those hoops. I saw it as a challenge, like, let's just do this. And then this year changed. So I mean, it's always changing, and I do my best to let them lead. It's kind of funny that as you were talking about them putting things together and following, you know, a process, they ask me all the time, like they ask me about my learning process. And it's funny because every now and again in a video that I'll put their stuff together, I do something different or something new. And I can tell their frustration level goes up a little bit because they're like, you keep throwing wrenches at us, right? Like you don't, oh, and I'm like, but that's part of the learning for me. Like, I feel like I might see something in a video and I might like the way that a transition happens or an effect that's used for a particular purpose. And so then I try to imitate it in our videos. And that's frustrating to them because it's like the moving pieces. They want the pieces to stop moving. And I get that. And I tell them, just go with the flow. You know, you don't see me losing sleep over the fact that I'm constantly seeing things that make me want to try new things. The pieces are moving for me too. And if you want, you can ignore all the moving pieces and just focus on the puzzle in front of you if you really want. It's up to you, right? It's part of your learning journey. So I think it's cool. but I have to say, so here's the flip side. So I told you some really cool things about what's going on at school. But again, this week I was back to the body camera talk. Somebody strap a body camera on me, because some of the things I'm seeing and experiencing are just wacky. And I jumped into a cool conversation on Facebook about this. I had a Facebook friend, not talk about the body camera, but just talk about how things have changed over the last 5 years in education. the kids that are coming to us are coming, they're coming with a different vibe. There's something missing that used to exist when you and I went to school. You know, some people would be quick to throw the word respect out at this, but it's more than that. There's just something, society has shifted in a way that students at school are not fitting the mold of what we know to be students at school. And some of that is good, okay? Like, don't get me wrong. I don't need compliance all day long from a group of children. But sometimes it's required, in my opinion. And it's those times, it's that ability to flip and to act a certain way for a certain reason that's missing. And I'm trying my best to instill that in my students, in that understanding there's a time and a place for everything. So sometimes in this room, you know, we will be humorous and we'll be joking in a way that, you know, would drive some teachers mad. And other times I need you to find a space in the room where you're going to be quiet for the next 10 minutes, right? Like, it's, there's a time and a place for everything. And they're learning, I feel like I'm teaching them and they're learning how to switch gears all the time because it's needed. It's, in my world, the world I live in, it's still needed. So when you go to a hockey game, yelling and screaming at the top of the bleachers or whatever, that's okay, right? But doing that in a classroom while someone's trying to talk to you in a whole different vibe, it's not appropriate. And I'm getting the feeling that we're missing a lot of those switches. Kids are missing those switches. They don't know when to do what, or they're just so focused on what they want to do, is the whole self-regulation piece, that they just cannot or don't want to regulate. They just want to go, go, go. And so it's kind of cool for me to be able to talk to you about the really awesome things that are happening in the great learning, but also to flip that switch and to tell you that I'm still ready to strap a body camera on just to prove that the things I'm telling you are happening at work are happening at work. Because I think a lot of people just don't get it, right? Like at hockey yesterday, I wasn't on the ice. I was sitting with the parents and I was talking to some of them and I was telling them about the work I do and some of the interesting things I've been seeing lately. And the look on their face was just befuddlement. Like, they're like, this is happening? And I'm like, yeah, this is happening. Well, why do you think this is happening? And I'm like, we don't have enough time to talk about why I think this is happening. But, you know, I said, do your children go to school and do this? And they're like, well, I don't think so. I said, well, you might want to have that conversation with them, right? Because when I'm on the ice with your kids, there's a time and a place, right? So it's a little bit more jovial. There's a little bit more looseness when you're out there. But there are times where I have to say, hey, stop talking. Look at the coach and listen to what he's saying. Show him that you're paying attention. Give him the respect that he needs for the next couple of minutes to show you what you need to do, and just stop with the fooling around. Like, it happens, the teacher in me comes out. And again, time and place. I don't know if other people are delivering that message. I don't know if that message is being delivered at home, but it's, I feel like it's just missing these days.
Someone else put out the, and I saw it somewhere on a Twitter feed talking about, and I think it might have been actually been an older survey. It was Peter Cameron that put it out there, kind of observing if, I'm probably messing the survey entirely, but something about, has there something changed? Is it any more difficult? Are the students less equipped to sort of arrive at school? And I like those conversations. I like being asked that. I often don't have a really great answer. Maybe it's something I could be paying attention to a little bit more clearly, but I don't often have that scope of experience to say that I've seen a specific shift. The challenges that I hear you saying, I would agree. I see those as well at secondary level. I see that there's something happening. I wonder around and we've talked about this, what more school can do, you know, what more can be done with school as that socializing agent to improve. It's like once you're into school, there's a lot of great tools that help, that there seems to be a lot of tools and resources to help you do better. How do I do this? If an individual is arriving, let's say, in a grade three classroom, and they don't have some of the fundamentals of being in a classroom, let's say, up to grade three, there's an invisible space in there where I think there's the assumption that just because there's support tools in the school, that that grade three aged individual will be okay. There isn't often that expanded conversation that I've been a part of. They may be happening. And again, I'm not an elementary school teacher. I haven't heard of the other conversations where it's like, well, the what if you have a grade seven student arriving and they haven't been in school yet they're arriving in grade seven, and maybe they can connect with grade seven curriculum, but it's so much more complex than just the grade seven curriculum. It's not about getting better at grade seven math necessarily, because at some point you're going to see some deficit of connection, and often I'm going to guess it's popping out in the behavior and the some of the social norms that would be expected of a grade seven student that started in the system and moved all the way along. I see it at high school as well. One of the conversations I've had both with students, which is very, very powerful. I've had it with families, and I have it with my colleague about at what point did the student forget that they were a student? So they've let go of some of the skills that they had. And this is where we can kind of pinpoint some of the triaging that we need to do to help them get back into the classroom. Sometimes that student has let go, like having the conversation that, yeah, you know, back in grade three, I just kind of stopped doing things, and you're just, wow, you know, because I'm working with a grade nine or a 10 student, and they've just let go of skills all the way back, right? So you've made me think a lot of different pieces in there. Ultimately, for me, it comes back to, is there ever going to be the possibility of putting tools into a school, into a public school system, that can clearly connect a kid, these kids that we're talking about, with an educational experience in a way that not only helps the kid be happy and functional, but allows the system to recognize whether or not they're kind of on the right step? Because you and I have talked about the complexity of both of our classrooms. And you know, where this started was the body cam, which is the, let's gather the evidence to say that some of the system tools, I think it's the suggestion that maybe the system isn't quite aware of the reality of being at ground level, considering the students that so need so much support. Yeah. And I still hang it back on the fact, I'm not sure how you, as an elementary teacher or elementary teachers, like that's got to be so stressful. It's got to be so stressful.
One of the reasons why this week was such an interesting week, and you'll love this actually, since we recently talked about duties and planning time or preparation time. Right now, my school board and maybe other school boards are in the same position. I don't know. We're having a really hard time filling our supply teacher. Holy cow! I just hit an ELL moment here. Our school board's having a hard time filling jobs every day of teachers who are sick or away. And so this past week, because we did not have supply teachers in the building, we had to pull our French teacher to go into a classroom for the day. And I lost my preparation time on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this past week. Now, every now and again, you're going to lose your preparation time because something happens and the school needs to run, right? Like the school's not going to stop running because someone needs their 40 minutes of planning time. But 3 days in a row, and two of those days, or at least one, was indoor recess all day. And I had lunch duty. So no preparation time. Lunch duty, which diminishes the amount of time you might have to get something else done. Clubs running at recess, Ted Ed Club, and helping some kids with some 3D stuff that they're working on, leaves no time for preparation during the day, right? So it's got to get done before school or after school. It's not going to happen during the day. That put stress on everybody. Those 3 days were tough because one day's fine, but 3 days in a row, you just get bogged down, right? You just get bogged down. So I remember Thursday morning I came in fully expecting not to get my preparation time because I couldn't handle mentally planning something for those 40 minutes that I was going to get done or do and then know that it wasn't going to happen. It's just too frustrating for me. So I went into work with the mindset of, okay, I'm gonna go in today thinking I'm not getting any time, and then let's see what I can do and what I can make work. But that was part of that was another layer of, I'm gonna use the word stress. It's not the right word, but it's like just another layer of another challenge. Like, oh, I have to do this today. How am I going to fit it in? Where is it going to come from? So it was one of those weeks, and I'm glad it's over, and I'm looking forward to starting the next one.
Can I pause this? It was also, remember we shared that tweet back and forth, which it could have, you know, completely happenstance fell into, maybe it was your feed or my feed. It could be that because of sensitivity to current context that it was noticed, but it was that Stuart Shanker quote that, you know, I dig the work that Shanker's doing with self-regulation. There's a lot there that is beneficial for not only individuals that are working through what that means to manage their self-regulation, but also for educators, for parents, anyone that wants to support the development of self-regulation in the, you know, the communities around them. But the quote around, there was a top 10 list or something, or it was a flipping the language, flip the switch, something about, is the school ready for the kid? And the question, I think, from Shanker's position was that the school needs to do the work to be ready for the kid. And I think it kind of triggered both of us a little bit. And our self-reg was triggered by a self-reg comment, but it comes at that point where I think that on one hand, in the world of sketch notes and where people just, because this is what it was, where you choose to put sketch notes down there, you know, you then have the picture, the drawing of two different lists comparing the language, old language, new language. And it I'm not going to say it candy coats it, but it makes it more accessible. But in making more accessible, there can also be a element of simplification so that you can understand it. I think depending where you on you are in your curve of helping individuals manage their self-reg, it can also speak to some of the frustration that comes with being a mentor, a facilitator, a supporter of that. And then that in itself is a conversation about you got to be good for yourself before you're good to help somebody else. But it's also the reality that it's a far more complex idea and philosophy than putting on a list that says, you know, the kid getting ready for school. Maybe a better way to put that would, is the school ready for the kid? Because then that brings it back to sometimes a hyper simplification of getting the school ready for the multiple almost kaleidoscopic nature of some of the students that are coming into our contexts. I'm not sure if the schools are able to keep up. And so you end up having sort of, I remember back when I was working back in the restaurant still, one of the most challenging places to be and as far as causing stress in my day was when I was developing recipes developing management documents and working in the kitchen at the exact same time. Now, that type of primary research is valuable, but I will tell you, having to be inside on the ground and developing the tools that were supposed to make the restaurant better, it almost killed me. Like, it was just, I was constantly on fire and putting out fires, as they say, and then having to sit down and try and chronologize it and put it into a way that I could actually improve the environment. You start to appreciate that management level where someone is observing and speaking to the individuals that are at ground level, and then that can be taken to a different place to develop and then being brought back into the loop. So let it incubate and be developed somewhere else and then being brought back into the restaurant. We had a very small management team. So often what I would do, I would say to one of the other managers, like, I need you in the kitchen. I need you to help out in the kitchen because I need to step out for a second to actually see what's going on here. And I don't know if that type of jumping in, jumping out in education has been mastered very well. We will go across laterally and be able to talk to our colleagues or something like what you and I are doing right now, having this conversation. But where are the moments where we can jump out of our context to say, okay, see this moment? This is the moment that I've been talking about. And I've tried to develop the tools in my classroom to deal with it, but I need something more. Developing strategies while you're in the trenches can only take you so far because there's finite space in that toolbox. So that's what you made me think about there.
Before we shut down for this podcast, I want to say that you and I think I remember that conversation that we had about Stuart Shanker and self-reg, and is the school ready for the student? You and I had a bit of a back and forth about that. And I said my piece about that part of it. Is the school ready for the kid? And I really enjoyed the fact that you listened to me rant about that. And it is a valid question. It's a valid question. But I don't know. I'm not going to open up that can of worms right now because, like, we're near the end of our time, but we could do a whole podcast about that. Is the kid ready for school, and is the school ready for the kid? It just makes me think of the number of times that students walk into kindergarten, and due to the fact that the child is so young, or due to the fact that, you know, there's a number of different factors, but kids come to school. And sometimes we don't know, and I mean the school is not informed of a particular way that the child will function or how the child will act or how the child, what sets the child off or what makes the child feel real good. And then the school has to discover it. And sometimes, and in my experience, it's the hard way, right? Like, we figure it out after a student has to experience like major behavioral stuff for us to recognize, this child has needs around this or has needs around that. I get that that's part of the school's job, but a lot of the times, in my opinion, kids are walking in and nobody's telling anybody anything. And you know what? That's a shame. It's unfortunate for the child. It's unfortunate for the family. It's unfortunate for the school staff. It just doesn't work for anybody. There are reasons why we're not informed. Maybe it's because the way that the child lives his life or her life is normal in the household where they come from, right? Like, there's nothing abnormal about that. Or then they get to school and then there are parameters at school. There are expectations at school around certain things in certain ways. And so then again, you get all these layers. And so you triggered me when you when that tweet came through and you and I were talking about it back and forth. Anyway, Clough, it was a real pleasure to get to talk to you on the weekend again and not midweek. And I have to say, I still have not posted. Our last episode 22 is not available yet as of this moment. And I'm not going to publish this episode 23 in iTunes until I deal No, sorry. This is 22. I'm not going to publish 21 until I publish. Oh, for goodness sake. I'm not going to publish 22 until I publish 21. And one more thing I wanted to add. You see this space right here?
Yes.
See that space right there? Your talk about sponsorship and stuff. I want to post something there. I want to post something there for the next episode just for fun. I don't know what it's going to be yet, though. It's prime real estate for sponsorship.
I love it. I love it. Digital sponsorship. So the bots on YouTube, you know what? Just start sending the cash, yo. And as long as it doesn't, it doesn't trip any freedom of information or, you know, products that neither one of us necessarily personally endorse. You're right. There's digital real estate there that you could just have something, you know, stamped onto it.
Yeah. Space.
I know, eh? I know me. Look at my space. I don't have any. It's like mine's intentionally cluttered. I mean, there could be some stuff put up at the top there. We could sort of put some sort of a flowy banner, like CNN style, kind of going along there. A ticker tape. The great thing is, you know, and I think this was part of our intent, the dual coding of this Decoded podcast is that anyone can go to the Decoded YouTube space and all the episodes are there. So, you know, it doesn't get you the pocket version where you can walk with your device, but you can still go and listen to it. So whatever the speed that this is the podcast, this is podcasting at the speed of life. There we go. Decoded podcasting at the speed of life. So if whenever it gets up, as my in-laws would say, whenever it gets up, that's the exact right time because there's already the rough cut online if someone chooses to find it.
That's true. That's true. Well said, Chris Clough. Well said.
Podcasting at the speed of life.
Next week we have Family Day on Monday. So let's see how that plays into our podcasting next weekend.
For sure, man. However it works out, I'm good.
Right on. Have a good one.
Take care, man.